Hey, if you suffered an injury in an accident and would like a free case review, make sure you call the super team at Daspit Law Firm. Free consultations are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 713-322-HURT. That's 713-322-HURT. Or you can go to the website, DaspitLaw.com.
Continues on the bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Well, Lance isn't back yet, and John's not here, so you get me for the next couple minutes until Lance gets back from wherever he went. We do have a couple calls, and that's great because the NFL draft expert isn't around to answer these draft questions. So I'm going to have – sorry, guys. I don't know if you want to hear from me talking about the draft. So I'll delay until Lance gets back. I mentioned earlier that I wanted to talk about the Rockets and not really get into the ins and outs of what's going on with them so much because it's not great. I mean, you guys can tell that. It's not a great product right now. But I'm not going to compare them to the best teams in the league because that doesn't make any sense. But I do want to compare them to a team who, well, we expected to be in their same boat, maybe contending for the Wembanyama sweepstakes or the Scoot sweepstakes. But let's talk about the Orlando Magic a little bit. The Orlando Magic beat Philly in Philly last night. Paolo Banchero had a nice game. He's a 20-point-per-game scorer. They've beaten the Celtics three times this year, somehow, some way, including back-to-back. The NBA has changed their schedule a little bit to reduce travel, so they played the Celtics in back-to-back games and won. They now have 20 wins. They're 15-11 in their last 26 games. That's a team with a young coach trying to find its way and a young roster, and all of a sudden, the Orlando Magic are a tough out. They beat contenders. And if you're comparing the Rockets and their rebuild to another team in the same boat, I would say they're a bit behind. Now, things can fluctuate. The Magic can go on a big losing streak, and the Rockets can win a couple games in a row, and all of a sudden the records aren't so distinct. But if you're trying to compare where franchises are and where you are in your build, just look to the Magic Kingdom. That's a team who we didn't expect a lot from. They stink at the guard position. You got Markel Fultz and Gary Harris. There's not a lot there in the backcourt. All their talent appears to be in the front court. With Banchero and Franz Wagner, you got Mo Wagner, the agitator, on the bench. And they find ways to be a tough out. I would say if you're getting a little upset about where the Rockets are, you maybe have a right to. I know it's going to be a long process. You've got all these pictures you want to look at. But there's a team that you should be looking at and going, why are they so much better than us right now? Is Lance back?
Mm-hmm.
Lance.
Yeah, I'm here.
When you look at the Magic, and we got calls, Brad and Julian, maybe we'll get to you on the other side. We're already a little bit behind. When you look at that Magic team and what they've been able to do with a backcourt that isn't great, I would say that's a team that's jumped ahead of the Rockets as far as if we're talking about future success, and it's only one season. We'll see how things go. I would be looking to them and going, hey, why can't we be them this year? Because I feel like the Rockets are should be a little bit ahead of them as because of what they've been able to do drafting the backcourt. But so far, I like the Magic going forward. Paolo's been nice for them.
Yeah, and you knew he would be. And he's a different player than Jabari. Jabari is a complimentary piece, kind of like Robert Horry was when he was a Rocket. And I think that Paolo Banchero is a guy who can change the fortunes because of how talented he is. It's just – you know, that's just the way it broke. It could be you could end up with Chet Holmgren, which maybe that'll be fine for Oklahoma City, but we'll see. He's obviously missing a whole year. I agree with you. I think you always look for how someone else has done something. Number one, it gives you hope, and number two, you might find a good way to do things. I do have serious concerns about what is the strategy moving forward? What is the process in place? Do you have a process? And I think it starts February 9th. That's a trade deadline this year. And Dale, they've got to get rid of Eric Gordon. I mean, he's unhappy. I don't think he's really bringing anything to the table. You got to move him. Now, in the past, you could have got a first for him. They had been offered a first in the past and turned it down because they didn't need a bunch of picks in years past when they already had a bunch. Now, unfortunately, I think you're in a situation where you can either, you know, take a one or two second-round picks, or you can trade him for a player. And even if you trade him, a lot of people talk about trading him for a veteran point guard. I mean, that sounds good in theory, but I think what you're going to deal with here, and this is just the truth, I'm not taking shots at anybody, unless this is somebody who is good enough and figures to be here more long-term and not just a one- or two-year guy, I'm not sure that the younger players are going to really listen to him. I don't think you're going to necessarily get the leadership stuff that you're really hoping for out of the Rockets. I could be wrong. Maybe this is a team full of guys who are ready to be led. But something tells me, based on their backgrounds, that they've never really been in a position of leadership or having been led by other people. They haven't been in structure. You know, Jalen Green has never really been in structure. It should be coming from the head coach and not from a traded point guard. And if you're hoping that a point guard makes all the difference in the world, I mean, the first thing I would do, and, you know, based on what we heard from John Wall said Steven Silas said that, you know, he made it sound like Steven Silas had no juice, that he couldn't do what he wanted to at the point guard position. And if that's the case, and KPJ is there, and it's not even Steven Silas's choice, well, I mean, I would question what they're doing. Like, what are they doing? You got to take Kevin Porter Jr. off the ball. You won a game the other day, granted, against a bad team. You won a game with your three most talented players out. And one of your – and I might start to argue that number three most talented players is Kevin Martin Jr. over KPJ. KPJ is a very talented player. But to me, Kenyon Martin Jr. should not go anywhere. I would never deal that guy. But I would be willing to deal Jayshon. I would be willing to deal Eric Gordon. I'd be willing to deal Kevin Porter Jr. if a team was interested. But I think the start of this whole thing, Dale, if you want to become the Orlando Magic, you got to have an actual game plan. And that has to involve a coach who is going to, you know, it's become old to say this, but it's just true. A coach that holds people accountable, you have to have a process in place. It can't just be your process is let guys play together and see what happens. It has to be more defined.
I would agree. And there's a thought that Steven Silas is just taking the shrapnel until the Rockets believe they're ready to advance and in terms of winning games, and then he will be replaced because at some point there are too many losses on your resume to justify keeping you around, even if it's not your fault, even if you are being handcuffed by the organization about who you should play and how many minutes you should play them. The losses mount, and then they go, well, we've lost too many games under this coach. We got to make a move. So Jamal Mosley is the coach in Orlando. He's in his second season with them, and it's just, I mean, they're not great. They're only 20-31, but you see these signs of a team that they beat Boston on the road. I mentioned Boston on the road twice on back-to-back games. They blow a lead. I mean, they're down big to Philly early. They come back and beat them. So that's progress, and that's all we want to see from the Rockets, and we've seen very little of that. And maybe it begins above Steven Silas, and he'll just be the one to take the fall. But when the Rockets want to start holding people accountable, it feels like he'll be the one to be held to account, and it'll probably cost him his job. And that might be unfortunate because it might not have a lot to do with him. And I've heard, Johnny, you talk about it. Maybe it has more to do with him than I think. But there's a lot of factors contributing to this. And, yeah, I talked about it maybe yesterday on the show or during the break about the Rockets go win a game and the three guys who are supposed to be cornerstones don't even play. So what do you take from it? And Jabari Smith, maybe the other one, has a bad game. So it's a win, but I don't know how much you take from it when none of the main guys you want contribute to it. So a lot going on and not great for the Rockets. Brad, Julian, we see you, but we are late for a break because, once again, Lance is the main force behind that.
Dale couldn't stop talking Magic basketball.
I love the state of Florida, as I've been told today.
Yeah, it is damp and terrible. But it does a lot of stuff for News of the Weird, so that's good. I want to tell you about Ghost Solutions. Well, that's the parent company for TGS Insurance. And TGS Insurance, they are really good at finding ways to save you money. What they are is They aggregate A-rated homeowners insurance companies, and they put out they take your address and they put it into their algorithm, and it kicks out all these – it's connected to all these different A-rated insurance companies. These companies spit out their – as soon as they put the address in, it spits out their rate. Apparently, it's fairly static, and it kicks out their rate, and then they pass it along to you. That's why you can get a rate within 15 seconds. It usually takes hours to shop just three companies. They can shop 5, 6, 7 at one time, and they do it just with their, you can do it just by texting the word money to 232323. Go ahead and do it. There's no strings attached. You find out exactly how much you could be paying versus how much you are paying now with your company. If you need to add flood insurance, they'll do that for you. If you want to add additional insurance for whatever it is at your home that you want covered beyond the standard coverages, they'll do that for you as well. But just know this, it's an A-rated company, and it's a competitive rate, and that's something you may not be dealing with right now. Text the word money to 232323. That's TGSinsurance.com.
Well, hello!
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more. Are on the air. This is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, I'm here. Don't worry. It did not, my thing didn't reset on me here. I'm live in Mobile, Alabama. If you want to get into any draft talk, of course, I'm knee-deep in the draft stuff. Just finished writing up some notes on this Penn State tight end, Brenton Strange. So if you have any questions about Penn State tight ends specifically, I think I'm your guy for that. I'm in Mobile, Alabama. Dell is back at the studio, and John is out of town for the rest of the week. Before we get to Brad, there's just one thing I want to say about Stephen Silas. I think all of us like Stephen Silas. He just feels like a super likable guy, and we all want to say nothing's his fault, even because, maybe Rafael Stone has control of this, or maybe Tillman wants to do this, or whatever. Maybe he's hamstrung. Listen, I think that's not really fair to Stephen Silas to say he has no ability to coach at all. That's just not true. Like, even if he's given an ultimatum about minutes or positions or stuff, his job is still, in practice, to get the most out of players, to help them improve in their game, to have guys play together effectively, to hold guys accountable and get after them in practice and in the game if he needs to. His job is still to improve the unit. There's nowhere in the planet that would want a head coach, even if you were tanking, not to improve what you've already got, not to see improvement in players. And so while we all feel bad for Stephen Silas, I mean, my gosh, this is 3 years of a ton of losses. Nobody lasts this long anymore. So the fact that he still has a job is really quite incredible, if you really want to know the truth, based on the amount of losses he has. And his job is to make guys better. Like, even if there are certain stipulations he has to work under, I still don't think he's done a very good job of the things that he does have control over. So, saying it's not his fault, yeah, I mean, but to me, that's almost damning to Stephen Silas to act like he has no control as a coach at all. Some of this is his fault. Guys are not getting better. Guys are not – they don't ever play in the fourth quarter effectively. Some of it is on Stephen Silas. So as much as I like the person, I think he does have to wear some of this. And this is not one of these things where he has to wait it out. You take all the bullets when they're bad, and then when they're good, someone else is going to come in. I don't think they're going to be good by the time someone else comes in. I think they're going to suck. At least the record will. And the next guy is going to have to try to figure it out too.
Yeah, I think – there's blame from top to bottom. I don't know.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know how much Tillman has to do with roster construction, but as far as what they're trying to do, I mean, they're bad. And you can't just point to one person and say, okay, that's the reason they're bad.
Right.
I know in your discussions with John, there's always the talk of what Nate McMillan did with that Atlanta team a couple of years ago, but there were more established veterans on that team than what we're seeing here, and they weren't, even when Nate McMillan took over, they weren't as bad as this Rocket team. So, sure, there you point your blame at plenty, players, coaches, general manager, and just hope that it's worth it. It's worth whatever they're trying to build. It comes to fruition, and then we're talking maybe a couple years from now, and we're saying, man, we don't even remember those times because this guy progressed, you hit on your draft picks, and now you're a contender for years to come. But we do have a couple calls. You mentioned Brad. Let's get to Brad. Let's talk a little bit about the draft. What's up, Brad?
Morning, guys. Hey, so with all the Texans, you know, glaring needs at, you know, just about every position, I mean, is there any way we sit this one out with the QB pick and wait till next year for a Drake May or a Caleb Williams, especially being, you know, possibly D'Amico's first year? Is there any possible way we pass on quarterbacks this year?
I would have said yes. I might have said yes 2 weeks ago. I would say no now. I think this is just as much about public sentiment as it is about anything. And against our conversation earlier, Dell, we were talking about the whole rebrand. They got new colors. Cal's running around throwing the H up all over the place. I really think this organization wants to pair a quarterback with D'Amico Ryans to really create the era of good feelings and start the honeymoon to where, even if it's rough for a year or two, the team will, you know, the fan base will be all on board with the head coach and the quarterback. So there was a time I thought maybe they would, and I'm not sure that that's not the right decision if you don't have the quarterback you really like. Like, if Bryce Young, I will say, if Bryce Young goes one, but here's what I think is going to happen. I think the Houston Texans are going to deal their second-round pick this year and move up to number one and draft Bryce Young. That's what I believe is going to happen. I think they want Bryce. I think they like Bryce Young more than C.J. Stroud, and I believe that whether it's Nick Caseri or Adam Peters, they are going to do what the owner wants, which is make sure they get their hands on Bryce Young. And as long as it doesn't cost them a first-round pick, I think the Texans will do what it takes to move into the catbird seat. Will it make people complain about the win over who'd they beat in the last game?
The Colts.
The Colts, yeah. Will people complain about that? Yes, they will complain. But I think the Texans will take destiny into their own hands by making a move. It's not going to make people happy that they have to trade to move up, but it will make them happy to get Bryce Young, and that's what I think is ultimately going to happen.
When you say they're going to do what makes the owner happy, does it make you feel good that they're doing things to make the non-football person happy?
But it happens to align with the fan base.
Yeah, but what does that mean if you don't?
I never think you should just do things to make fans happy, because the same fans will want you fired the very next year. So you can't win with a lot of fans. With that said, sometimes it's just the right move. It happens to align. And I don't know that Caleb Williams and Drake May, you just don't know what happens. Maybe D'Amico, everyone catches fire and they're, you know, and they play out of their heads and they get to 7 wins somehow and everyone's healthy and Stingley takes a big move, step up, and the defense is playing great. And, you know, what happens if you're at 7 wins? Then you're packaging a lot of first-round picks to move up. You got to package a lot to move into the top 2 or 3 picks.
Well, this is my thing. You mentioned the name D'Amico. Should a decision about your first-round pick be made before the guy's even in the building? Should you already have a game plan in place before, particularly if Nick Caserio is – his dismissal is a byproduct of hiring D'Amico. We don't know that to be the case, but if it does happen, would the game plan completely change? Not that D'Amico's
right, let me ask you a question. He's been here for 2 interviews now. You don't think that's come up?
It's possible, but has D'Amico, who's been game planning to try to get to the Super Bowl, dug deep on Bryce?
Yeah,
Young?
That's true. No, he probably hasn't, no. Now, coaches do watch games on Saturday. A lot of them do. That's their. They get home a little bit earlier on Friday, and Saturday is either a travel day. It's either a travel day on road games or at home games. A lot of times, you actually aren't doing a whole lot, so you watch football games. So, my guess is D'Amico Ryans from Alabama has watched Bryce Young. He may have even, I don't think he's had time for this, but maybe he's called over there and gotten a report. You're probably right, though. He's like, his time, unless he's just been watching games on Saturday and caught him, I'm sure he's watched playoffs. I'm sure D'Amico Ryans has watched college football playoffs. So I'm sure he's somewhat familiar with Bryce Young. I'm sure he has an idea of what his own personal beliefs are of having a tiny quarterback. I'm sure he's got some opinions. Yeah. But has he dug in deep? No, you're right, Dale. He hasn't dug in deep.
I just think it's interesting because we don't know what he would want for coordinator. I'm sure the Texans have discussed. I'm sure he's brought up who he might bring in as far as an offensive coordinator if he gets the job or if he wants the job, at least. It appears they want to give him the job. So all these things are moving parts, and does a 5'11", 180-pound quarterback suit what his potential OC would want? There's a lot of stuff going on, but I get it. As far as what it feels like and what it would look to for the fan base, getting Bryce Young with D'Amico feels like a win. It would just be – that's a very straightforward and simple approach to this. And if Texas can get that done, great for winning the press conference, and then we'll see how the rest of the offseason plays out. Julian, you've been waiting a long time. I assume this is a San Francisco call. I'm not sure. But we'll get to Julian before we go. What's up, Julian?
What's going on, guys? So with y'all's first two draft picks, I know everyone wants offense. Me and John have already talked about this. Here's something that no one said. How about Jalen Carter with number two? And then you double down and you get another big guy on the edge with Wilson from Texas Tech. He's in that Alden Smith, long arm, 6'4" type stuff, like the Armstead, you know, the like you said, the 49er way, right?
Mm-hmm. So what player did you say with the second pick?
Tyree Wilson.
Oh, yeah, he won't be there. He'll
Wilson
already be gone.
From Texas Tech.
Yeah, he'll be gone by that pick. But it has crossed my mind. You know, it has crossed my mind. You could go defense. You could just go best available and get some really good players. And I'm not convinced that they won't look defense with the number 12 pick. But I think number two, once again, my prediction is number two turns into number one. I think they deal to move up one space just to make sure they get their guy. But if not, they may be able to sit tight and get Bryce there. They may decide to go C.J. Stroud, but let's face it, they need help on the defensive front. They need pass rush, and they need defensive tackle. So at some point in the first three rounds, they are going to be drafting on the defensive front. I do believe that. And I do believe it's going to look like San Francisco. Big, tall, long. It's, think of the Colts, DeForest Buckner, Eric Armstead, Kwity Paye, Nick Bosa. They're like mirror images of each other. You're going to have a team that I believe is going to be big, strong, long, great lean muscle mass. This is the way you want to build it. That's 100% the way that you should be building it. I've been a big proponent of this for years, and my guess is D'Amico is going to have a GM follow the pathway of traits, height, weight, length, speed, Fred Warner-type guys. That's who you're going to have here. So I'd be on board with that.
And a quarterback, the antithesis of all those things.
Interestingly enough, yeah, the ultimate outlier would have anybody who drafts Bryce Young, and the Colts would be the same way. Colts don't believe in that stuff. If they draft Bryce Young, it'd have to be the ultimate outlier. Houston, Texas, any team. I just so you know, my editor made me take out in my scouting report, he took out the fact that I said that he was the smallest starter since Doug Flutie in 2001. He's like, yeah, but we don't really know his size yet. I'm like, come on, dude.
Can
we know his size? What are we doing?
Is your editor like a football person or just like a journalist?
Yeah, he is, but he's more of a journalism guy where he wants very specifically, like by the book, he could weigh. He's like, you know, they could have him weighing 210. Like, he said, what do you mean by smallest? I'm like, height, weight. He goes, yeah, but we don't know what his height and weight are. And so now it's the lightest quarterback. He's changed it to like the lightest quarterback.
But you don't know his weight, so how could it be the lightest quarterback? If he was
lightest listed okay. Weight, he had to put listed by the school or something like that. I don't know. Just leave what I put in.
Well, if you would take my advice, your descriptions would be a lot spicier.
Yeah, I don't want to ever take your advice because I want to have your advice because I want to have a job.
You should say the ball makes a wee sound every time he throws it.
I'm not going to say he goes wee. You wanted me to do that for Kyler Murray,
no,
and I'm not going
to do that for Kyler Murray.
Yeah, and I'm not going to do that here for Bryce Young. I'm not going to say screams wee every time he throws it. I'm not doing that.
I would say something along the lines of the first quarterback drafted that was ever smaller than Brandon Cooks.
Well, I can tell you this much. I am going to break it right here, and I'm going to talk about tequila because after doing shows with you, I always need it because I have to reassess what I'm willing to do and willing to not do. You always try to trick me. Tequila never tricks me. Tequila's when I'm drinking Maestro Dobel, tequila's honest with me. It says, whoa, friend, let's slow down, or it says, hey, let's just sip tonight. Let's have a refrigerated Añejo Extra, or let's do the Cristalino at room temperature. My Maestro Dobel always tells me the truth, and that's why I love it so much. It's not – well, I mean, it's also 11 generations of tequila makers in Tequila Mexico who have put together the flavor profiles that are incredible. And when you have Maestro Dobel for the first time, you're going to find out that, oh, this one needs to be on my shelf. And, you know, it's a top-shelf tequila without having outrageous prices. Now, they have one that is – expensive, and it's the best tequila I've ever sipped in my life. And I've had the best brands. This was the absolute, it's a Cristalino Añejo that is off the charts, and it looks incredible how it's packaged. But so they've got something for everyone. I promise you that. Maestro Dobel. Wherever fine liquors are sold, it's Maestro Dobel.
This is Heisman Trophy winner and College Football Hall of Fame, Mike Rozier, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Godfather of Houston Sports Radio, the preeminent NFL draft analyst. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Do you, like, I'm not, somebody just, I don't know, somebody just sent a, you're not tagged in it, but somebody sent a link to, they said, just heard Lance Zierlein say Jabbar is a complimentary piece like Robert Horry, and it reminded me of this flagrant 3S conversation on Jabbar versus Paolo Banchero. But I'm not like – that's – I think this may be his own podcast, but I'm not out of line there, am I? I mean, Jabari Smith to me is a complimentary piece. That doesn't mean – now, when I say Horry, Robert Horry was not – well, Robert Horry did not put the ball on the ground and beat you off the dribble. Jabari's not that guy either. Robert Horry was a distance three-point shooter who could block shot, who could guard bigger guys. He was the guy that defended Charles Barkley and slowed him down. He was a shot blocker. He had great length. Actually, the more I think about it, it's actually a pretty accurate assessment.
But no one wants to hear that about your...
No, I know. You don't want to hear it, but like I do want to see him. I do think in this era, number one, points are much cheaper. You can get to 120 points easily. Robert Horry played in an era where, you know, 100 was a ton. So you're already scoring 20% more on average, at least 20% more. So if you added 20% more to a guy who Horry didn't average 10 points a game, but if you did, he'd average 12. I think Jabari more than likely is going to be like a guy who is 14.5 and 9 and 1.5 blocks a game is my guess. I think you want him to shoot well from three. I think you want him to be as close to 40% as you can get him. And I do think he's going to get much, much better because he has a natural stroke. But RJ, you can jump in too. I know you watch a lot of ball. I don't think I'm out of line for saying he's complimentary. That's not a shot. But I don't think he's a true number one or number two on this team. He's not ever going to be that.
I think people would have preferred you saying he's like a Chris Miami Heat era Chris Bosh, like a floor stretcher, jump shooter, good defense. When they hear Robert Horry, sure, big shots and all, but you're talking about a guy who spent most of his career showing up when it matters most, but really not much beyond that outside of his time with the Rockets. But once he got away from the Rockets, he was more like, hey, the seventh or eighth guy on a team.
No, if you go look at his stats throughout his career, even with the Rockets, they're way lower than you expect. He was just an absolute killer in the
postseason.
That's
what I'm saying. No one wants to hear that.
That's it.
about right. the number three pick.
Yeah, well, no, but how he plays, he's long, can defend multiple positions. He can shoot from distance. Like, their games are similar. I think your output you want is going to be substantially more. Dream, Robert Horry played on a team with Dream where it was a one in, four out, and Dream was going to get a majority of the touches and a majority of the looks, and you only had to wait for kickouts. I don't, like, Jabari's going to have more points. But I think his game and the way you want him to impact the game is really going to be more blocking shots, defense, and make threes when they're open. I don't think it's changes.
Well, this is what I'm saying. That's what Chris Bosh was, the fulcrum of their defense. He could switch. He could shoot from distance. He could hit the mid-range when he became a member of the Heat. I think that's a more comfortable comparison for people. Or if you're saying, I'm just looking at some of his comparisons before he got drafted. Like, Rashard Lewis was another comparison. Rashard Lewis was a legitimate 18 to 20 point per game score in his prime. I think it feels better when you say that as opposed to, oh, Robert Horry? Great. See, this your editor would get to you and go, you can't do that. You can't call him that.
Oh man, I had this great comp. You would love it. Not only do I have CJ Stroud's comp as Jared Goff, which I think is amazing, I think I did I comped a white wide receiver to a black receiver. Who did I just comp? I just had someone, and I just thought Dell would be extremely excited about this comp.
What white wide receiver were you evaluating?
Let me see. Was it a defensive back? Who did I just recently write up? Let me just see. Let me open this up here. Joey Fisher, Grant DeBose, Ricky Pearsall. Oh, no.
Who did you compare him to?
Alex Erickson.
You compared him to a white receiver. You got to change that.
Yeah. It was the whitest of white receivers, too. Alex Erickson from Wisconsin.
You're going to have to get rid of that.
Yeah. I'm trying to look. Did I compare Grant DeBose? No. Yeah, you're right. I just fell right into the trap. Did I compare Jordan Battle to a white safety? No.
What white safety? Who's out there?
I could just say
Tyler Rapp?
Whoa. Asian.
Or Taylor Rapp.
Taylor Rapp is, I think, half black and half Asian.
I wouldn't know. I don't see race.
Yeah, he's not a white guy, Dell.
He looks like it in his helmet. Sorry. He's a Pacific.
Chris Conte. I'm gonna compare everyone to Chris Conte. Every black safety gets
Clayton Flagellum.
Clayton Flagellum. All right, this show's gone too deep inside.
No,
football
I was Mark. Right. He's half
Illinois. Clayton Flagellum.
He's half Chinese, half white. You could call him Taylor Rapp. I was right. He's half white.
No. Okay. So is Pat Mahomes half white?
You know the rule. Do I have to get the collie rule out here for you?
Hold on a second. How come a drop of Asian blood doesn't make you Asian?
You know the rule.
Why is this a rule? Who made this rule?
Your people did, I think.
No. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
So you want to go with what my people from the 18th? First of all, the German people did not make that well.
Well, they've had their own eugenics issues, actually.
Yeah, well, hold on a second. My people, the Austrian people, did not make
these. Oh, you're Austrian now?
Yep. I'm Austrian. That's like if you're from Richmond Rosenberg, you always want to claim Richmond and not Rosenberg.
Well, I'm sorry that I didn't know Taylor Rapp's full ethnic breakdown, but even in his Wikipedia, it says he's half Chinese, half white. So, but I do apologize for not knowing he was half Chinese.
Yeah.
But they're not.
Yeah, how about show a little respect?
They're not a lot of starting or guys who play a lot as far as safeties who are white. So if you're trying to compare Jordan Battle to a non-African-American player, if you want to compare him to a non-African-American safety, you can say Taylor Rapp.
Or Malafunga from.
From San Francisco, All-Pro.
To compare him to by the way, that dude is really, really good. Man, he is really good. You know who he reminds me of?
Don't say Troy.
Troy Polamalu.
You can't do that.
Why not?
You can't do that. That's not allowed.
Why not?
Your editor wouldn't let you get away with that.
Just because they're both Pacific Islander players?
Yeah, he would say,
players? Pick
someone else.
Oh, let me see. Okay.
Brian Dawkins.
Viasi Kahima.
No, you're still in that mode. And was only a really good special teams player. He didn't have Hufanga's attributes.
Well, it's just something that feels similar. I don't know.
I would say you can compare him to Brian Dawkins.
What about I would compare Taylor Rapp to Olivia Munn?
No, one of those guys plays football. The other is a woman who's an actress who has apparently not a great reputation, according to one of your good friends. But no, you can't compare him to Olivia Munn.
Well,
your editor wouldn't allow it.
No, but she is. She said half Asian.
Yeah, but she doesn't play football.
I can't. I'm out of comparisons.
Well,
I don't know.
Fine.
My other thing is I like to compare if you went to the same school. I like to do that too. I've also been accused of that. Your comps are so lazy. They're always compared to the same school. That's because the same school gets the same kind of players.
Well, Olivia Munn didn't play at Washington. She went to Oklahoma. You can't do that.
Olivia Munn went to Oklahoma?
Yes. She was born in Oklahoma City.
See, I don't have a problem with Oklahoma people, but this is where my wife would step in and say, that's why she's so trashy.
Is she trashy? I don't know.
Well, did she ruin John Mulaney's marriage?
Well, did Mulaney ruin his marriage? Why are you blaming the woman for that?
Isn't it
his fault? She wasn't the one
who was married.
I
just know he had to go to rehab for drugs
feel
and
like
alcohol.
You're being sexist, and that's the patriarchy seeping in. You're blaming the woman for ruining a marriage that the man was involved in? That's not her
fault.
Here's
what I know. He was married, then he met Olivia Munn, then he was in rehab, then he wasn't married, then they had a baby.
Well,
I'm just following the timeline and following the money, Dell. That's all I'm doing.
I think you should blame the man who made a commitment to his wife. That's not Olivia Munn's fault. Are you blaming Mary Elizabeth Winstead for apparently being a homewrecker with Ewan McGregor?
Ewan McGregor's got to be stronger.
Okay. You're not going to blame your girl, but Olivia Munn, you ain't got those type of attachments to, so you're going to blame her. I see you. I see you working.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead is a saint.
Is she? She according
she's
to you,
also, apparently she's also a super activist, so you'd also have to be dealing like, hey, you think we could go to dinner? No, I'm going to some pipeline. There's some kind of thing in Alaska. Like, oh my God, he's so.
What are you complaining about?
I'm going to put this hat on and go march. Like, can we just go watch a show or something?
Why are you complaining?
Why are you always activizing?
It gives you time to sit on your bed with your dinner towel on your bed and eat.
You don't want to if you have Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Watch yourself.
You don't want a dinner towel.
So you want a dinner towel while you're with Nicole, but not with Mary Elizabeth Winstead?
No, there's all the kids.
Okay.
You saw what I had to deal with yesterday. That's why sometimes we'll lock my bedroom door.
That's true.
It's not even the bathroom anymore where I hide. Now I have to lock the bedroom door.
Well,
just to watch Yellowstone.
You brought that on yourself by having all those children.
I did. It's nothing. I mean, it did. It's my fault. We're going to break it here. When we come back, I promise you I will get to – it'll be a short segment. We'll get to the beef in football. Four football players involved with a beef on Twitter. This is what happens, and we'll get to it when we come back next.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. You found The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, Del, so, you know, one of the things that Twitter has brought us is more beef. Athletes talk a lot more. One guy who talks a lot is Micah Parsons, I've noticed. Micah Parsons is going to be in some stuff on Twitter. I think at some point, you know how we see on World Star or whatever videos we see where somebody at school has said something about somebody else, and so they go to their house and try to beat them up on camera, stuff like that? I'm wondering if that's going to happen at a Pro Bowl or a game where somebody has Twitter beef and it spills over into a nightclub or something. But anyway, here's what happened. The other day, Kayvon Thibodeau was watching a game, New York Giant rookie. And you may remember them. They were blown out against the Eagles. And then, of course, San Francisco got blown out as well, although they got blown out, obviously, with a quarterback who had a torn UCL and another one who had a concussion. So Kayvon Thibodeau says, "Way this game look, we might be better than the 49ers. Laugh emoji, laugh emoji, laugh emoji. Joe Staley, former San Francisco 49er tackle, said, "You're a flash player who gets bodied by average tackles. Don't let the New York media affect you too much." Kayvon then said, "Who are you, bro?" Joe Staley said, "Enough for you to respond. Congrats on your 4 sacks this year, though. That's huge. Unbelievable numbers." Now, Joe Staley is an outstanding four-time All-Pro, or he was an outstanding All-Pro tackle. We already know that Kayvon Thibodeau may know him, but probably didn't. He didn't know who Jeff Saturday was. There's a good chance he didn't know who Joe Staley is. Kayvon Thibodeau sat at NFL Network telling me and Bucky Brooks we didn't know what we were talking about because he is like nobody is a more talented rusher than him, even though he didn't have great rush production at Oregon, and that he is a master. He's a chess master in sacks. And Bucky, of course, said, if you're a chess master, then get sacks. Stop telling us how good you are and go get sacks.
Was this a conversation just during a break or something?
Yes, when he was dressing us down about, y'all don't even realize how good I am. Bucky, if you come at Bucky, Bucky will come at you times five. I'm just telling you that. And then we had him on the air. And then, so that was pretty good. Like, Joe Staley, that was, there's not much Kayvon Thibodeau could say to a former All-Pro when he just had four sacks a rookie. But Michael Strahan, this is a Hall of Fame. Oh, and then the kicker, by the way, then the kicker came in.
Which kicker?
The kicker, Lawrence Tynes, said, hey, Kayvon, ask Joe if you can see his NFC championship rings. You're a rookie, so maybe you don't know this, but the loser of the Super Bowl gets a ring for winning their conference, and he has two. Then he did a crying emoji, and then Joe Staley hit him with, what do you think he hit him with? He responded, what would an offensive lineman say to Lawrence Tynes?
Shut up, kicker. I don't know. What would he say?
Yes, you're a kicker.
Okay, watch
That's all I said. You're a kicker. That's obviously.
Oh, because Lawrence Tynes is a Lawrence Tynes make the game winner against the 49ers in the NFC?
Probably. Yeah, probably
for the
Giants. Did.
I'm sure that's where probably that came did. From.
And then you have Michael Strahan jumped in and said to Joe Staley, he said, you also had a great career and should be proud. Don't go after a rookie and my kicker. Kayvon had four sacks this year. I had 2.5 on you, your rookie year, and I was old at that point. So don't forget that. Let my young guy live. Hashtag daddy. So, a little Twitter.
And this isn't like new school. This is like old vets or retired guys going after each other in defense of the young blood.
And then Rex Chapman has to respond because, you know, Rex is in
involved?
On literally, I don't know. Rex has to be in on every tweet that has any amount of eyes on it. He's got to put his own. He just put a couple emojis. Then Micah Parsons says, damn, bro. Then Will Blackman does a John Cena, ooh, gif. Let me see. Anybody else? Then a bunch of people who paid for blue check marks comment. Then RG3 says, damn, Kevin Hart, damn. Okay.
Will
then
Blackman.
BetOnline AG has a deer going, keep going, eating some popcorn.
Will Blackman
then Will
was
Compton
a,
says, oh, my sweet Jesus.
Will Blackman was a giant as well. He won a Super Bowl, beat that San Francisco team. Did Spencer Paysinger get involved? How many ex-Giants were in this? How many
ex-Giants? I'm looking right now to see if there's any other Giants Daily, whatever that is. So, no other Giants got involved with this. And I also see that there is no comments. I was checking to see if Joe Staley came back. Joe Staley knew to just let it die right there.
Yeah, once Michael Strahan got involved.
Yeah, there was no reason to keep going.
No. So the Giants defended their own after Joe Staley went after him. Joe Staley probably was like, what the hell? What all these flashbacks from when they beat us in an NFC title game, where did that come from? Well, you took a shot at one of their guys.
Yeah.
Always be aware. There's always a chance.
Receipts will go back. They go back way back. All right.
A decade.
We're gonna break it. We're gonna break it here. We're gonna get back on time as we always do. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports.